pull up a chair. I want to tell you about an airplane that, the first time you see one in the flesh, actually stops you where you stand. Grown pilots go quiet, kids point, and people who've never cared a lick about airplanes suddenly want to know what that beautiful thing is. This is Radio Hangar. I'm Tail Dragger, and you're listening to The Hangar. And today we're going to sit down with the most graceful airliner that ever wore an American flag on its tail. The Lockheed Constellation, the Connie. Now, before I get rolling and lose myself in this thing, let me tell you who helps keep the coffee hot around here. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation Challenge coins for every milestone in flight, first solo, private pilot, instrument rating, all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. And friend, if you've ever soloed a tail dragger on a gusty afternoon, you've got a story worth a coin. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. All right, the Connie? Picture the shape first, because that's where this airplane grabs you. Most airliners then and now are a straight tube with a straight wing bolted on. Sensible, efficient, forgettable. The Constellation is none of those things. She has a fuselage that curves, bends like a dolphin's back, thin at the nose, swelling through the middle, tapering up at the tail. There isn't a straight line on her anywhere. And then there's that tail, not one fin, three. Three tall, curved, vertical fins standing up off the horizontal, like the fingers of a hand. You could spot a Connie from 3 miles out and never once mistake her for anything else in the sky. And here's a thing most folks don't know. Those three tails weren't put there to be pretty. Lockheed wanted a tail tall enough to give the airplane the control authority it needed, but they also wanted the airplane to fit inside the hangars that airlines already owned. A single fin big enough to do the job would have been too tall for the doors. So the engineers split the job across three shorter fins. Function first, the beauty was a happy accident. Now here's where it gets interesting. The man behind this airplane, the man who leaned on Lockheed to build it, was Howard Hughes. You know the name. Movie producer, millionaire, record-setting pilot. A little bit mad and getting madder as the years went on. But in the late 1930s, Hughes controlled Transcontinental and Western Air, TWA, and Hughes had a vision that most of the airline world thought was fantasy. He wanted an airliner that could carry a load of paying passengers clear across the United States, nonstop, coast to coast. And he wanted it to fly high enough and fast enough to do it above the worst of the weather, in a cabin where the people inside didn't need oxygen masks to breathe. In 1939, that was science fiction. Airliners of the day were the Douglas DC-3, the Goonie Bird, a wonderful airplane, and I've praised her on this show, but she cruised down low, right in the bumps, and crossing the country in one meant a whole day of hopscotching from airport to airport, stopping to refuel, stopping for the night. Coast to coast could take you the better part of a day and then some. Hughes went to Lockheed out in Burbank, California, with a bag full of money and a wish list that read like a dare. Give me a pressurized cabin. Give me four engines. Give me the range to cross the continent. Give me a service ceiling up around 25,000 feet, above the weather, and make it fast. And Lockheed, God bless them, said yes. They built her in secret at first. Hughes insisted on it. He didn't want the competition, or his own rivals at the other airlines, to know what TWA was going to have. So the airplane that would become the most recognizable shape in the sky was born behind closed doors. Let me set the scene for you on that first flight. January of 1943. The country was deep in the war by then, and the Constellation, the airplane meant to carry vacationing families and businessmen, first flew in olive drab military paint. The Army had taken the project over for the duration. She lifted off from Burbank, and the test pilots knew right away they had something special. She was fast, faster than the fighters of just a few years before. A Constellation could cruise up around 300 miles an hour, and there were fighter planes in the 1930s that couldn't do that flat out. And she flew high and smooth and quiet, for the time, way up, where the air was thin and the ride was glassy. Now I want you to climb aboard with me, because this is the part the spec sheets never capture. Step into a Constellation cabin in the late 1940s, and the first thing that hits you is the smell, warm oil, a whiff of avgaze, leather seats, cigarette smoke and coffee from the galley. That's the perfume of the piston airliner era, and if you're old enough to remember it, you just smiled. You settle into a seat wider than anything they'll sell you today. There's legroom. There are white-jacketed stewards and stewardesses. On the long overnight runs, they'd make up honest-to-goodness sleeper berths so you could stretch out and sleep across the country. Some of the TWA airplanes had a lower lounge, a little club down below where you could sit and have a drink. Then the engines light. And oh, what a sound. Four Wright R3350 engines. Big 18-cylinder radials, twin rows of 9 cylinders each, and they do not start politely one at a time. The prob swings through, a cough, a bang, a cloud of blue-gray smoke rolling back past the window, and then that deep, throbbing, uneven rumble that smooths out as she catches. Feel it in your chest, feel it in your teeth. Multiply that by four and point it down the runway. The whole airplane trembles and comes alive. And when those four big radials run up to take off power, the noise is a wall. Glorious, thundering, mechanical music that no jet has ever matched or ever will. She lifts off, tucks the gear up into those graceful nacelles, and climbs away into the high blue where nobody had ever ridden in comfort before. In 1946, once the war was over and the airplane could finally do what Hughes always meant her to do, TWA started flying the Constellation on passenger routes. And Hughes, being Hughes, made a show of it. He personally flew a Constellation from Los Angeles to New York in a shade under 7 hours, coast to coast. In an afternoon, think about what that did to a country. Before the Connie, America was a big, slow place. The country was measured in train days. A businessman in Los Angeles and a banker in New York lived on opposite shores of an ocean of prairie and mountain. To cross it, you gave up days of your life. The Constellation took that ocean and shrank it down to an afternoon nap and a couple of meals. You could have breakfast in California and dinner in Manhattan. That had never, in all of human history, been possible for an ordinary paying passenger. The Connie is the airplane that made the whole country feel small, and then she went and did the same thing to the ocean. The later Constellations, the Super Connies and the ones they called the Starliner, stretched the fuselage and stuffed bigger tanks and better engines under those beautiful cowls. The Starliner could fly the North Atlantic nonstop. New York to Europe, no stops, and she could do it westbound, into the teeth of the headwinds, which is the hard direction. For a stretch there in the 1950s, if you were crossing an ocean in style, you were very likely crossing it in a Constellation. TWA flew them. Pan American flew them, Air France, KLM, Lufthansa Airlines all over the world hung their reputations on that triple tail. She wore the livery of half the flags on Earth. She flew for presidents too. There was a Constellation fitted out for President Eisenhower. They called her Columbine. First real Air Force One in spirit, if not in that exact name, was a Connie. Now, I'd be doing you a disservice, and I'd be lying to fellow pilots if I told you she was a perfect airplane. She wasn't. Those big Wright 3350 engines were magnificent, and they were temperamental, complicated, worked hard. There's an old line among the mechanics and crews who lived with them. They used to call the Constellation the best three-engine airliner in the world. Sit with that a second. They meant it as a rough joke, and they meant it with love, because on a long flight it was not unusual to have one of those four big radials act up and get shut down, and you'd come limping in on three. The flight engineers who ran those engines, and yes, she needed a flight engineer up front managing all that machinery, those men earned every dollar. They nursed those engines across oceans, leaning the mixtures, watching the cylinder head temperatures, coaxing. But here's the thing, she got you there. She got you there in a comfort and a style and a speed that nothing before her had ever offered, and the people who flew her, crew and passengers both, loved her with a loyalty that airplanes rarely earn, and then almost cruelly fast, it was over, because right about the time the Constellation reached her absolute peak, the most beautiful, most capable piston airliner ever built, the jets showed up. The Boeing 707, the Douglas DC-8, and overnight, and I mean nearly overnight, the whole magnificent age of the big piston airliner was finished. The jets flew higher, faster, smoother, and without all those temperamental cylinders to baby. A jet could cross the Atlantic in half the time and none of the drama. The Connie, the queen of the skies, the airplane that shrank a nation and then an ocean, was old news before she'd finished middle age. The airlines pushed them out to the cargo haulers and the charter outfits, and then out to the boneyards in the desert, where those beautiful curved fuselages sat baking in the sun, stripped and forgotten. It's the oldest story in aviation. The thing that's a miracle on Tuesday is obsolete by Friday. Progress doesn't stop to say thank you, but here's where I get to be an optimist. And you know I always circle back around to that. She isn't all gone. There are people, good, stubborn, wonderful people, who could not stand to let that shape disappear from the sky. Restoration crews have spent years and fortunes and I don't know how many thousands of hours keeping a precious handful of Constellations alive and, in a couple of cases, actually flying. There's a Super Constellation kept airworthy over in Europe by a Swiss outfit for many years. There's the beautiful work being done here in the States. Down in Kansas, up at museums, folks are pouring their hearts into these airplanes. The airline TWA itself is gone, folded into history. But there's a gorgeous Connie that was restored, and now sits as the centerpiece of a hotel built right into the old TWA terminal at Kennedy in New York. You can walk aboard her, sit in her, have a cocktail in that curved fuselage and imagine. And when one of the flying ones fires up, when some restoration crew swings those props and lights those four big right radials one at a time, cough, bang, a cloud of blue smoke, and that thundering uneven rumble rolls across the ramp, I promise you every soul on that airfield stops what they're doing and turns to look, because that sound and that shape, they're a message from a time when crossing the country was an adventure and crossing the ocean was an event. When flying was something you dressed up for, when the most advanced machine in the sky also happened to be the most beautiful. We don't build them curved anymore. We build them straight and efficient and sensible, and I understand why, and I even approve. But every now and then I miss the curves. I miss the idea that an airliner could be a work of art with three tails standing up against the sunset. If you want to read more about her, the folks who've written the histories of Lockheed and of TWA have done wonderful work, and the Smithsonian and the museum crews keeping these airplanes have the real stories from the people who flew and fixed them. Go find them. Go stand next to a Constellation if you ever get the chance. Trust an old pilot on that one. You can find us anytime at radiohangar.com. I'm Tail Dragger. Next time you see that triple tail, tip your hat to the Queen. Keep the blue side up, and I'll see you back here in the hangar.